And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state out there in the whole union. That would be Alabama. I'm talking about this show sends its signal way on down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, all the way back over east to Gadsden, and then even parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. Hey, listen, you hear the advertising when we go to break. A lot of times you're catching the ads for things like Just Love Coffee and ZLA Solutions and others. So let me tell you this. We are a separate business. Right Side Radio is a standalone entity. We are not owned by the stations that we're on. When you hear us, just know that we're sending our signal to multiple stations, and we exist on the basis of ad sales and other forms of fundraising. And so, yeah, the reality is if you want to advertise with us, you got to call us, and we would love to have you on the team. We got some great advertisers. We got room to add some more on our website, rightsideradio.org. If you go to where it says advertising and contact, click on it. You can send us a message, and we will get back in touch with you ASAP. If we stand for the things that you believe you stand for and you want to advertise your business, we'd love to talk to you. So, yeah, rightsideradio.org. Send us a message through the advertising tab. We'll be right on it. I got a caller on the line real quick. Let me do that. Colin from Decatur. Hey, Colin, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, Phil. I just wanted to chime in on the whole border situation.
Yeah.
Some prior experience in law enforcement here. Not going to focus on gangs that are coming across because everybody knows that's happening. But I will say when I was in law enforcement, there were a lot of wrecks that I worked that unfortunately there was a lot of illegals causing the car accidents, and quite a few of them were actually fatalities, and not a whole lot got done once they got into the ICE holding, and then they'd get pulled out, and they basically would get a slap on the wrist. Very few of them even got deported.
Yeah, so, I'm sure that's true,
concerned,
man.
Concerned that stuff like that's going to skyrocket in addition to, you know, some violent crime that's just going to occur.
Were you in local law enforcement? Were you state law enforcement? What'd you do?
I was in Texas law enforcement. I was part of the state troopers in Texas.
Wow. Well, thanks for your service there. Appreciate that. You know, I just read an article, and it may have been in my stack that I didn't get to a minute ago, that one of the issues they're having right now is they're having to pull so many Texas state troopers from the northern parts of the state to the southern that it's leaving wrecks unattended, and they have a slower response time for things in the northern part of the state now.
Yeah, people I know that are still in have said that it's going to get significantly worse, especially if they do just mass release them.
Well, hey, man, Colin, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Good insights. And thanks again for your service. We appreciate that very much.
Have a good one.
Hey, you too. You know, the other thing I know I've seen because I had a friend that has experienced this is illegals who are driving not getting insurance because, you know, they don't want to put themselves on the radar. So they fly under the radar best they can. But then when they pop up incidentally, like an accident, then the people left holding the bag are the ones who were not at fault in the accident, who did have insurance, but now their insurance is having to pay for it all, as opposed to the person who caused the accident. And it's a mess, man. It has trickle down effects everywhere. I mean, don't think for a second this is a crisis on the border and, oh, by the way, how are we going to feed them and where are they going to go? No, then it's things like less law enforcement to respond in other places. National Guardsmen who are not now at home or capable of responding to a tornado event or a natural disaster. You've got situations with, you know, industries like insurance. You know, you've got the inability to process people who committed a crime because we have no record of where they're from. It's a mess. All right, let me jump on, though, to the next part of the Triple Dipper. So, military-minded. Let's just change the tone here for a minute and talk about some things. You know, the military is near and dear to my heart. You guys all know that. 30 years total of service between my deployments and time in the Guard and Reserve and all of it. Many of you the same way. Lots of folks out there that have served in various capacities in our branches of the military. We got a lot of installations. Alabama's very military-friendly. I mean, look down all the way from Fort Rucker down there in the Wiregrass region. In the River region, we got, of course, Maxwell Air Force Base. And then you've got Anniston Army Depot, the Fort McClellan National Guard Training Center, Redstone Arsenal, You got major installations all over this state. Well, some of the things that are happening, we'll start off with this. News around the military is one of them is the renamings. We've talked about it. Well, the renamings are now picking up speed. So Fort Rucker is now officially Fort Novosel. I was talking to a great guy down in Dothan not long ago, and he was telling me he was part of the naming commission, and they tried to get very active. I thought, Fort Novosel, who is Novosel? Well, Novosel was a Medal of Honor winner. He was actually a Dothan guy, and he was stationed at Fort Rucker. He was an aviator. So it fits. I get it. And they've decided they have no choice but to embrace it, so let's pick one of our own. So they did, and so Fort Novosel is now the old Fort Rucker. But as of 2 days ago, we are now looking at Fort Benning and Fort Hood have officially gone through the name change process. So Fort Hood, those of y'all that were stationed out there with 1st Cav, Fort Hood, or 3rd ACR for that matter, Fort Hood is now Fort Cavazos. And my first thought was, did they do that because they were close to the southern border? They knew one of the because General Richard Cavazos was a Texas-born Mexican-American, is what the article I've got here from military.com says. But I will say this. At the very least, he was a pretty dynamic individual. He was I believe, a 4-star. He won the Distinguished Service Cross twice in Korea and Vietnam. He was apparently a heroic individual and rallied his soldiers multiple times during major operations in both conflicts. And so, Fort Cavazos. And I've heard, by the way, and this would just be classic. So any of y'all that have served in 1st Cav, which prides itself being the biggest division in the military, has the biggest patch in the military. It's huge. It takes up like the whole upper arm. It's a monstrous patch. With the horse head and the stripe on the yellow shield. But it's 1st Cav Division, 1st Cavalry Division, right? They own most of that post. And now it's Fort Cavazos, which a family member of mine pointed out means they can call it Fort Cav. Ah. I see it now. This was not about honoring a general who won the Distinguished Service Cross twice. No, this was so you could name it Fort Cav. So, 3rd Cav and 1st Cav both stationed there. Anyway, we'll see. Fort Benning, a place that I love and have served at quite a bit. Fort Benning is now Fort Moore. It's named for Lieutenant General Hal Moore. Hal Moore, who was a battalion commander, Battle of the Idrang Valley, I think it was 27 Cav in Vietnam, the first major air assault operation and the subject of the book and the movie called We Were Soldiers. So anyway, I think the whole renaming thing is on the one hand is ridiculous, but I appreciate the attitude of the folks down in Dothan and maybe the other places too, who said, if you're going to stick us with this, if you're going to say we have to, then we're going to get involved and we're going to help pick the name. And so, anyway, Fort Novosel, Fort Cavazos, Fort Moore. That's where we are right there. Then I got other stuff. So, looking around the military, some of these things just interest me, all right? And I think they're going to interest some of y'all, too. I don't know how many of you ground pounders out there have been 11 Bravo or an 18 series guy on the field, and you know you got overhead cover. There is nothing like knowing you've got close air support at hand. And part of that is not just the rotary wing guys flying in their Apaches or Little Bird with guns. No, part of it is the fixed wing, having the A-10 Warthog. Now, for those of y'all that don't know it, have you ever seen an A-10 Warthog, Boomer? The A-10 is a, you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, straight wings.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly, straight and wings, big giant jets on the back.
Yes, I was about to say, and the big, like, it's like the big nose. Right?
Oh, yeah, the big nose, and it has teeth on the
front.
Yes. And they paint that thing usually with shark's teeth in the front.
Oh.
I mean, that's a bad plane,
that
man.
Is a bad plane.
And that plane has also been upgraded now. It can carry quite a few ground attack munitions. I mean, it can drop bombs now, but it's low and slow. And they say that. They know it's low and slow.
Mm-hmm.
And A-10 pilots, they pride themselves on the fact that they are low and slow. I mean, you can see the pilot's eyes from the ground when he's coming in on attack run. And if you've ever seen a gun run by an A-10, it's inspiring because they come in and they've got that, I think it's a 50 caliber minigun in the front that has the Gatling gun.
Right.
And when it kicks off, everything in the front of it is gone.
Wow. It's gone.
It's a tank buster. Well, all right. So there's been a move by the Air Force to try and get rid of the A-10. Oh. Yeah. There's been a move by the Air Force for the last 5 or 6 years trying to get rid of the A-10. They don't like it. It's low and slow. They don't want to do ground attack. They want sexy, you know, like, you know, F-16s and F-22s and whatever. Well, the ground pounders love it. And there's very few things that Congress has been able to intervene and go, you know, you're just not going to get rid of that. So Congress has been fighting back, and the A-10 is not, you know, is still there. And it's still flying close air support missions as needed. It made a name for itself in Iraq and Afghanistan. But it looks like the most recent NDAA, the National Defense Authorization, the defense budget, looks like the new NDAA is authorizing the downsizing and eventual expiring of the A-10 fleet. So by 2029, all y'all out there, all you ground pounders, all you people that put boots in the mud, and you know what it's like to have an A-10 flying overhead cover, the A-10 is going away by the year 2029 is what we're told. Dadgummit. And this year is the first year they're actually going to take an entire squadron off the inventory. So 21 A-10s are going away this year. So, dadgummit. I don't like it. I don't like it one bit, Boomer.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
I feel the same way, and I've never been around one.
I'm telling you what, man.
I like that.
Before we go to the break, I got to tell you, if I'll never forget being at Fort Knox, I think it was, Fort Knox, Kentucky, and they put on what they call a $1 million minute. It's basically where they burned $1 million worth of ammunition in 1 minute of a live fire demonstration. They had, as we're sitting there, you know, Bradley fighting vehicles come rolling up and troops come pouring out the back, and they set up everything from TOWs and javelins and just started lighting up targets in the range in front of it. Small arms fire, all of it. You know, you got belt-fed M2 50-caliber machine guns blowing away things up front. And as that all began to cease, then you hear a noise, and over the speakers they start talking, and you realize what's happening next is Apache gunships are coming up over the top of the bleachers we're sitting in and then rolling out in front of the troops and just laying waste to the ground. But the coup de grace was when you hear the pilot calling in from the A-10, and he's on a gun run, and he acquires his target and just, and I swear, when he lit that thing up,
wow,
it's like his plane stopped in midair. Dang. And we sat there, and for 1 minute, it was the most devastatingly awesome thing I have ever seen, as, you know, the almighty force of the U.S. military just destroyed a range out in front of us.
The range was no more.
It was like, yeah, why do we even use this range anymore? It's done. It's cooked. It is cooked. I was sold. Nothing like it. All right. Listen, that's enough of me waxing poetic about the strength of the U.S. military. Let's go ahead and take a break right now. We'll do that. Yeah, we'll do that while I calm myself back down and come back. We'll keep going here on Military Minded, different news from around the U.S. military. We'll be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. I knew I'd get myself in trouble with the A-10 because I knew I'd get reaction out of it. But I also knew as soon as I stumbled over the nomenclature or the caliber of the weapon on the front end that I was going to get text messages. So I ran quick to the internet. So I said 50 cal. It's a 30 millimeter GAU 8A Avenger 7-barrel Gatling gun. That's what it is. Now that I've said it, I'm going to the text messages because I'm looking over here, and lo and behold, Barry from Huntsville corrected me on it. Up to 16,000 pounds of mixed ordnance in the 30-millimeter GAU-8A cannon on 8 underwing and 3 under-fuselage pylon stations, including 500-pound Mark 82 2,000-pound bombs, Mark 84 series low-high drag bombs, incendiary cluster bombs, combined effects munitions, mine-dispensing munitions, AG... Barry from Huntsville is a fan, man.
Wow. I'm going to say, let's save the A-10. Let's go. I mean,
and,
dang.
And Glenn from Blountsville just says, I got to see an A-10 fire from the tower when I was sent to Slovakia. Burr. I got a caller on the line who has seen one firsthand. Brian from Huntsville. Hey, Brian, how you doing, buddy?
Mighty fine, and I do not want to see that fine bird retired. A-10 Thunderbolt, a.k.a. Warthog, and somebody already got to me on the 30mm, so they beat me. But Biggs Army Airfield, before I made NCO, I stood guard over two of those birds on occasion. Got to put my hand on the outside of them.
They're just tough, aren't they? They're just tough.
Man. And then Reforger, when we go to Reforger from Fort Bliss and everything, we had some assigned to the cab. And boy, those things are magnificent. And I didn't get my boots muddy unless I had to break track on a tank. But we were so blessed, and we loved having those birds overhead. And our German friends in West Germany, they call them Fork Devil.
They call them what?
The Forked Devil.
Oh, the Forked Devil. Yeah. Wow. That's cool. Yeah. Thanks,
just
Brian.
Just because of the way the wings were. You have a good one.
You too, buddy. Yeah. So they're looking at retiring the A-10 Warthog. Thunderbolt's its real name. The A-10 Thunderbolt 2 is where we're actually at, I believe, right now. But yeah, they're looking at retiring it. But I will say this. There's always that inter-service rivalry, you know, Air Force versus Army, whatever, Navy. And the guys on the ground, the Army and Marines, we respect the Air Force, generally speaking. We love the A-10. It's just much loved. I can see it right now. Steve from Huntsville says the A-10 shoots an explosive 30mm round from the nose. It's a Red Bull can coming your way. And can you imagine just blowing out Red Bull cans, just brr, 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 just wearing things out? Wow. Roger from Ardmore. I knew I'd get some guys involved. Phil, the best CAS aircraft is the A-6 Intruder, all weather, anytime, anywhere, attack aircraft. Okay, respect. Michael from Taft, imagine if we sent those A-10s to the Ukrainians, how devastating it'd be to the Russians to have our throwaways destroy their new stuff.
Okay, I have a question.
Speak to me.
So my question is, when they retire a piece of amazing equipment like the A-10,
right?
Is that like what we would give away to someone else that is in need?
Sometimes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just wondering. I'm like, they're in perfectly good order. Why are we getting rid of it?
Well, the question is going to be, are they in perfectly good order? Because some of them are going to be retired out that were the oldest in the fleet. And they, you know, they have airframes have to be, they measure them in hours. You
right.
know, and they've got to go through all the usual testing. And they can fly further than their, you know, their shelf life. But they're going to have to be maintained. And then the question becomes, if we take them out of our fleet, are we also, by the way, going to wind up not having spare parts on the shelf anymore?
Got it.
So it's, you know, there's a lot of things. And then there's also technology. Sometimes we do foreign military sales quite often. I mean, we got a new thing out recently that the Abrams tank is going to be going to Ukraine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but there's technology even within that tank that our folks use every day that we won't sell to a foreign nation.
Correct. So they would take stuff out of it.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot more to it.
Okay.
Does it mean that we're going to maybe see Ukrainians flying A-10s? I don't know. All I know is, and I'll say, too, one of the things the Air Force argues, I didn't mean to do it a whole segment of the A-10, but now that we're up against the break, I guess I'm going to have to. But one of the things that the Air Force argues is that in an asymmetric sort of a insurgency style warfare that we've had, like in Afghanistan and even in Iraq, you're not likely to see it. We have air superiority, and we don't have to worry as much about what ground forces have in their hands that can take down a plane that flies low and slow.
Got it.
Maybe different with the Russians or the Chinese.
Got it.
They have real air defenses, and the A-10 could be very vulnerable in that environment.
Okay. Makes sense.
Makes sense. Tony from Piedmont says, love with a heart, the A-10. Awesome overwatch for convoys in Iraq. Yes, indeed, brother. Yes, indeed. All right, folks, I got more military stuff. It's not all A-10s. I got a stack of stuff here. Y'all stay tuned. Phil Williams, hour number 3, coming right up. Right Side Ruffians out there. You are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international, covering down on all of it, like the dude just said. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, so I'm in number two of the Triple Dipper. Military-minded, I call it. Text lines blew up. David from Huntsville texted in and said Marine representative or former Marine representative Mike Gallagher from Wisconsin says we ought to give Taiwan, I think he says, all of our harpoons, missiles. Anyways, basically saying we ought to arm up Taiwan with whatever we don't want. So I'm not opposed. Here's a story from realcleardefense.com. So the Government Accountability Office, which I didn't know they did this. I thought they just were bean counters. But the Government Accountability Office filed a report recently. This came out 2 days ago, as to our country's military readiness, claiming that we have, and I'm not claiming like I don't believe it, that there have been repeated challenges over the last almost generation that have downgraded our military readiness. In its May 2nd report, the GAO says the U.S. Department of Defense has faced several challenges as it worked to rebuild and restore readiness across the military while also seeking to modernize forces. The U.S. military has been on a consistent conflict footing for the better part of a generation as it fought twin insurgencies in Iraq and Afghanistan. They say that the mission capability has declined considerably since 2017. While the U.S. Army and Marine Corps improved in the ground domain, they say, we find declines in the sea, air, and space domains. They cite, for example, only two of 49 aviation systems met their annual mission-capable goals, and the vast majority missed by over 10%. So they go down through the entire thing. I won't read you all the various aspects of the military that they claimed had problems, but what they're basically saying is being on a war footing that long, even though it has the ability to give experience to the troops themselves, it has the ability to also wear down resources, and so they're just saying that we're not at the same level of readiness that we need to be. I don't deny it. But I look at it also, too. We've talked about it on the show ad nauseum. Right now, the struggle is to also recruit personnel. None of the service branches right now are projected to meet their milestones for recruiting this year. They didn't last year. I think it back. I think the Marine Corps and one of the other branches did finally make it. But part of that was a paperwork shuffle. They took people who'd already signed a contract but they weren't going to enter into the service until this year, and they recategorized them as already being in the last year in order to say they met their milestones. Okay. Let's don't play shell games. Let's just get out there and say we got it or we didn't get it. And right now, we ain't getting it. Here's another one. U.S. Special Forces reinventing themselves for a fight with China. This one came off of DefenseOne.com. Story came out just about 11 days ago. So, story out of Fort Bragg, North Carolina, talks about the training and the emphasis on training up the next round of U.S. Special Forces, Green Berets. What are they focusing on? What are the keys that they're looking at? You know, as they come out of what some would call typically a FID-UW mission or direct action missions out of FID-UW stands for Foreign Internal Defense and Unconventional Warfare. The FID-UW and direct action missions of Afghanistan and Iraq, they're saying that they're being retooled now and geared in a slightly different direction, that one of the things we're going to see more and more SF or Special Professional Forces guys doing is dealing in what's known as information operations. The gathering of IO, the ability to perceive on the battlefield what is there so that you can do a much more determined strike. That being said, they said they're watching Ukrainians right now. They're literally watching Ukrainians, and they said the Ukrainians have developed the ability to detect, fix, and jam Russian drones. That's key. So you're looking at U.S. Special Forces probably having small teams that would insert deep that would provide jamming capability. And we already have SIGINT and Special Ops always has their signal teams that are able to put up relay stations and that kind of thing. One step further. Drone capability, mini drones, like Switchblade suicide drones, whether they can employ Ravens close in on the battlefield. And this is a developing and emerging technology. And they're saying right now that they're planning, you know, heavy drone instruction for special operations, especially special forces. They're shifting the goals within the language schools. They're not teaching Dari and Pashto because we're not going to be in Afghanistan anytime soon. They're switching over to Chinese and Russian being the most leaned upon, and they're adding Ukrainian. Not because we're going there or anything, right? There's that. Special Forces retooling its mission. Here's one. So, quiz for you. What military branch do we often consider a military branch that is technically not a part of the military branch because it's not part of the DOD? Boomer's looking at me with the quizzical look. The Coast Guard. The Coast Guard is technically a part of the Department of Homeland Security. The Coast Guard, though, is basically a militarized portion of the Department of Homeland Security. And it has a live fire mission every single day. I mean, their rules of engagement are different than ours. They are constantly on patrol, and they are in, you know, locked and loaded because they're interdicting drug runners and all kinds of stuff all the time. But they also, people don't realize, a lot of times the Coast Guard will deploy, and like right now, the Coast Guard is in the Gulf of Oman as part of an international task force, working with the U.S. Navy and foreign navies. Well, and since they have different operating parameters, they can do things that the Navy couldn't do quicker. And they also have arrest authority. You know, they can do things that they're basically deputized for law enforcement. They can arrest and interdict and seize and board ships and do things that it's part of their charter. They can just do it. Not that we can't. I'm just saying they can do it as part of their daily mission. U.S. Coast Guard, though, fast response cutter seized $80 million worth of heroin off a fishing vessel in the Gulf of Oman just 2 days ago. That's cool. The U.S. Coast Guard cutter Glenn Harris was operating in support of Combined Task Force 150, and its boarding team discovered 1,964 kilos of heroin. That's a lot of heroin. That's a lot of smack, man. 1,964 kilos of heroin on a vessel that was transiting international waters after it left Iran. So it left Iran with 1,900 kilos of heroin. No, it's not trying to fund terrorism or anything. No. Anyway, they had to seize $30 million worth of meth and heroin on another fishing vessel 2 days prior to that. So they have that one Coast Guard cutter operating way outside the bounds of our Coast Guard has seized $110 million worth of illegal drugs in the Gulf of Oman just in the last week. That's awesome. All right, you will be intrigued to know that the another glass ceiling is being broken. It's important. Don't laugh. It's important.
Sure it is.
We have to break glass ceilings.
I'm sure we do.
For us to be a well-ordered society. You can't have glass ceilings. Oh boy. So Vice President Kamala Harris is now soon to be the first woman to ever deliver the commencement address at the West Point graduation ceremony in about 2 weeks. Whoop, whoop. Can I hear a whoop, whoop for Kamala? Don't do it. Don't even play it. No, do the womp.
Did you see my?
Do the womp, womp, womp.
Oh, that's what we need.
That's what we need, yeah. Womp, womp. There it is. Harris will deliver the keynote address on May 27th at the U.S. Military Academy. Have you ever seen her give a speech, though? When she gets excited and she's trying to pretend she's excited and she talks like she's talking to kindergartners. And it'll be so cool and you'll do these things and you'll go to space. I mean, she's like, oh, please don't do that. Now, they do point out in the article, military.com, very liberal reporting usually from military.com, but military.com does report that it is very common for vice presidents to address the graduating classes at least one of the service academies on a rotating basis, and this time it's West Point. And Harris will be visiting West Point very soon. I look at it. Okay, so here's the thing. First of all, honor the office. The Vice Presidency of the United States has now come on to the stage to address the graduating class at one of the major academies. That being said, I respect the office. And if I were in the crowd, I would sit there respectfully. I would salute. I would salute the office. I would do all the things that are supposed to be done. And every one of those cadets better do that. But I will also tell you that I guarantee you that there's a bunch of those cadets that would much rather hear from a warfighter. They'd rather hear from somebody who's been in the trenches, who's going to tell them why they just spent the last 4 years getting an Ivy League education in uniform. They're about to go be leaders of troops. And I just find myself wondering, what is Kamala Harris going to say? What does she bring to the table besides, attaboy, you're about to be in the Army? And I just hope she doesn't go down that road and embarrass herself, embarrass the office. But, congratulations to the graduating class of 2023 from West Point and all the others. Thank you for your service. All right, military-minded. There you go. We'll probably read a few texts when we get back from this break. And then come up, we'll do the last one. I got a section we're going to go out on that I'm just calling, you can't make this stuff up. Oh, man, the things people do when they get in office. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.